Your New Money Story by David Krueger, M.D. From MentorPath Publications. Read by the author.
Welcome to Your New Money Story, a roadmap for financial success. I'm excited about collaborating with you in this seminar series to talk about the mind matters and brain business for empowering money strategies. Just after the workbook table of contents, you'll find a seminar series outline for these five seminars so you can follow more easily. Notice that the corresponding workbook material is in brackets below the title of each seminar. In the first seminar, we'll talk about your relationship with money and the power of your money story. The remaining four seminars will look at the principles and practice of changing that story. I've integrated information and research in psychology, neuroeconomics, behavioral economics, and quantum physics, along with strategic coaching. This synthesis is emotional economics, the study of the interaction of mind and brain on money behaviors and financial decisions. We're about to organize the Mind Matters and Brain Business into the Roadmap System, the acronym for the seven-step process to understand your relationship with money and to change your money story. Then you'll learn how to write a new story for financial success. We're going to combine the art of fulfillment with the science of achievement. Although we'll discuss application to your money story, you'll see that the principles are fundamental to all change, growth, and success. My mission? To change the way you think, specifically to help you examine and understand your relationship with money and map new possibilities and choices to write a new money story. My hope? To guide you to look around the corner at the next years and decades of your life. What you do today can affect the quality and choices, perhaps even the longevity, of those tomorrows. My stretch goal? To have this work together make a positive, powerful difference for you for the rest of your life. As we go through these seminars, I'd suggest that you actually do the exercises in the accompanying workbook. From Columbia University, we remember 2% of what we hear, 25% of what we see, and 90% of what we do. So my suggestion, put it into action. Let's first talk about your relationship with money. You're writing a story that you may not know how to tell. It's a very personal story with its own history and language. It's highly visible to others, but often not to you. It's a story that you talk about every day, think about several times a day, is remarkably simple, yet intricately complex. This story has an internal and external dialogue, a secret language, encrypted messages. It's complicated because some important aspects are emotional, unspoken, even unconscious. This story is about the longest relationship you'll have in your life. Your parents discussed it before you arrived. People will deliberate it after you die. Maybe you'll get 10 years out of a car, perhaps 50 with a spouse, but this story you can never stop writing or living. You can't break up with it, run away from it, or coax into loving you more. Even though it's unexamined and elusive, you orient life decisions around it. When I spoke with an internationally well-known self-help guru, his response was, "You know, Dave, I don't know how to tell this story to myself in order to know what to change." You alone determine the genre, fiction or nonfiction, tragedy or triumph. This story ghostwrites every aspect of a life story, from what you eat and drink to what you plan and play. Health, recreation, stress, even the water you drink are all impacted. At times, you've used this story to regulate your moods, increase self-esteem, influence others, soothe emotional pains. And how you live this story will be what you teach your children. What they see in your behavior and hear even sense as your beliefs will be what they incorporate as their own. The villain or hero is the most popular legal substance to all people of the world. It speaks to you. You speak with it. It's your money. As Lauren Isley observed in The Unexpected Universe, reality has a way of hiding from even its most gifted observers. Let's consider two questions. What's your money story? And what would you ideally like your money story to be? First, what is a money story? Your money story is not your income, expenses, assets, debt, or your net worth. It's your relationship with money, the plot and storylines of your money autobiography. Your money story is the secret language of money at work. It's the unconscious tale you continually tell yourself about what you say with it, what money means to you, what money says about you. It's a running dialogue about how much you feel you deserve, how much you think you're worth, how much you think you're capable of. It's also about what would happen if you had more, or what would happen if you had less. We speak with money. We speak in a straightforward way. Money says whatever you tell it to. It can convey any message. The wonder of money is that it can represent anything. It's a stand-in for what we idealize and desire, yet fear and lack, for what we covet, crave, spurn, chase, or follow. We use money to show how much we care or how little. We use it to measure success and buy happiness, or at least try to. We use it to bolster our self-esteem, to regulate moods, even to influence others. We use money to communicate. We speak with money as a tool. We give money meaning. We breathe life into it, give it emotional value, build a relationship with it, and make it bigger than it is. We use money to try to soothe emotional pains, buy the respect of others, even of ourselves. We speak with money as a self-statement, and money can make any statement. What people say and do are inevitable, unavoidable self-statements of their beliefs and personal realities. All that you say is about yourself. A life story or a money story manifests through self-statements. The story tells most about the teller. Some examples: proclamation of freedom, currency of caring, promissory note for happiness, embodiment of power, evidence of security, proof of worth, license for opportunity, instrument of control. When we see a new car and want it, what we're really doing is acting out our money story. Just below our consciousness, we're adding a new plot line to our money story that says, this car will show what I'm worth. This will make people respect me. This may validate me. An obvious example is the self-statement of spending money. For example, conspicuous consumption is when you buy a red BMW convertible and drive it in the middle of a busy street. Contemptuous consumption is when you buy a red BMW convertible in the middle of a midlife crisis and drive it by your ex-wife's house. Now, that's not a self-statement. I'd never buy a convertible. Without realizing it, we use money every day to tell a story about ourselves and our lives. And we use money in self-talk, the messages we tell ourselves. These internal beliefs may include: people who have significant money are lucky. People with money are different from me. You have to work really hard to make money. Truly spiritual people don't have money or wealth. Money will buy happiness. Money means the same to everyone. We have external and internal dialogues about our money. The external dialogue: Part of what keeps the language of money a secret is the fact that it remains largely unspoken. Our social conventions create unusual pairings of spoken and unspoken agreements. We can speak of a woman's dress size, but not her weight. We can discuss the cost of plastic surgery, but not her age. We can debate financial markets and economics, but not personal income or debt. Ask the host of your dinner party, "How much money do you make?" and you probably won't see the next dinner. Ask, "What amount of debt do you have?" and you may not see dessert. An agent at a writer's conference discussed working with her authors over the years. She talked about the details of some of her contract negotiations. Someone in the audience asked, "Would you talk about how much money is involved in the book deal so we can get an idea of what to expect?" She looked shocked, and her immediate response was, "Well, I've always felt that you don't talk about money." While looking as if she were trying to compose herself, an older gentleman from the back row said, "I thought once you finished the book, you finally do talk about money. You shut down your computer, change out of those sweatpants, and start selling your book." Well, of course, he was right. His frankness and confrontation sparked a lively discussion about money and contracts. The presenter revealed the specific figures involved and went on to lead a discussion useful to her audience interested in writing books for a living. A therapist once wrote, "Money questions will be treated by cultured people in the same manner as sexual matters, with the same inconsistency, prudishness, and hypocrisy." The year, 1913. The therapist, Sigmund Freud. Almost a century later, most of us have learned to talk more easily about sex, yet may remain seclusive, embarrassed, or conflicted about certain aspects of our own money stories. Guess who had the seasoned, dynamic wisdom to say this? "When we don't speak something, we make it more powerful." That was Harry Potter. The internal dialogue about money. While we may not speak openly of something, our inner voice never gives up the conversation. We have dialogues in our minds before making a decision to exchange our money, our time and energy, for something else. Every exchange involves two asking prices, financial and emotional. The conversation, often silent and automatic, has many dialects. It was the debate I had with myself in my first official job. At age 8, I earned 10 cents a row chopping cotton from my dad on hot summer days. When I saw my classmates enjoying the sodas and candies they purchased, I joined them. My treats were quickly gone. I began to wonder, was that candy worth half a row of cotton? I also learned to ask, will I get enough from this soft drink to pay one row of cotton chopping? I soon answered no to both questions. Family farms were below the radar of child labor laws back then. Another example, at an elaborate birthday party, the parent unconsciously whispers, "I'll give you what I never had as a child." Another example, the preamble of spending may be to rationalize, "Well, this seems like a lot of money to spend on an HD big screen TV, but if I spread it out over the next 11 years, it only costs 42 cents a day." And my wife said, "Dave, if you really want the TV, this is rationalized spending." A sidebar here. Set alongside your notes, page 8 from the outline, the ABCs of money mistakes and financial fallacies. I'll illustrate them throughout the seminars. Another example. We regard the same dollar differently depending on how it's obtained. Found money can be consumed frivolously. George Costanza in Seinfeld said, "This is found money. I've got to blow it on a horse." Gifted money spent without debate. Salary money used after serious comparative choice. Savings money relinquished only with definite need or emergency. And it's the same dollar. The dollar doesn't even know who owns it any more than war bonds knew about the war. This is a framing bias. Money is treated differently based on its context. This quote is from a veteran of 3 bankruptcies on the verge of her 4th. The high from shopping is more powerful than the low from bankruptcy. We'll talk about tilt in just a bit. And finally, the parent. I spend so much time at work, when I'm off, I like to buy my child something to make up for it. A justification bias. Money speaks to us. A study was done in which volunteers had their brain scanned when they tasted 5 Cabernet Sauvignon. You know, I have some elaborate mechanisms to get research from around the world, even correspond with some researchers, but I can never find studies like this to volunteer for. The volunteers were told, before tasting, the price of each of the wines. They rated the wines, as you might expect, according to price. The most expensive one they liked the best, and on down to the least expensive as the last. And their brains corresponded. The area of their brains that encode the pleasantness of an experience, the medial orbital frontal cortex, was more active with the more expensive wine. Actually, the volunteers tasted one wine with 5 different stories. They experienced more pleasure, and their brains registered it when they were in a more expensive story. Money sometimes communicates to us just below the level of our conscious awareness. Money speaks to us as confidant, seducer, adversary, protector, or drug. Money serves as a tangible container for hope, freedom, ambition, love, or disappointment. Money is the one true metaphor that can stand for anything else. A money quiz. Let's talk about the quiz and the workbook. Review your answers. If you haven't done it, give your immediate single answer to these 3 questions. My current annual income is what? In order to ensure happiness and contentment financially, with no more money problems and worries, my annual income would need to be what? And thirdly, what does money mean to me? One word. I have given this quiz to hundreds of people over the years. In more than 9 of 10 cases, people's answers indicate that their annual income would need to be about twice the current level for them to be happy and feel free from money worries. For example, someone who makes $50,000 a year believes it would take roughly $100,000 a year in order to be financially content. Someone who makes $500,000, 5 times the first person's magical number, believes that the figure would need to be about $1 million a year. And in discussions with people after they take this little poll, I often find that people who have actually seen their income double over time have also doubled their happy and content amount. In other words, once those who earned $50,000 achieved their hoped-for $100,000 goal, they then raised the bar and believed that it would now take about $200,000 to be happy. This emphasizes how more is not a goal, and how important it is to define what good enough is. There is no end point of wanting more. There's no limit to what you don't have. When you focus on more, on what you don't have, you ensure dissatisfaction. Even when you change the numbers, the story remains the same. The story in this case is, I need twice as much to be happy. That's just one example of the common story threads. There are dozens of others, just as irrational and just as hypnotically compelling. Let's look at your answer to the question of what money means to you. Remember, money can make any statement. Worth, autonomy, security, freedom, love, opportunity, power. A secret language becomes most developed by emotionally powerful desires. Unmet needs show up as symbolic wants. A desire is not quieted by its satisfaction, and desires can be created by filling them. Money is the legal tender of desires. Money becomes the ink blot of the Rorschach test. When our eyes look straight at it, there's only a design on paper. But when offered the chance to imbue the design with meaning, the interpretations will be as wishful and varied as the fantasies of the respondents. People may think money is a reflection of their self-worth or their morals. One woman said, "I don't know why money is getting the best of me. I have good morals. I shouldn't have money problems." Of course, money isn't related to morals. Action gets you money. Smart action gets you more. Efficiency keeps your money. Are there ethics? President Obama said, "If you work hard in America, you shouldn't be poor." Well, you may work hard, but overspend, gamble, have 5 children, 3 of whom are college age, live in the Upper East Side of Manhattan, or have a shopping addiction. Who do you think in America has the best work ethic? Think about it for a moment. When I've done this seminar live, I hear various guesses. Farmers, immigrant workers. Who in America has the best work ethic? The answer? Heroin addicts. They get up every morning with a hustle, 7 days a week, plus holidays, 365 days a year. They can't let a single day go by without working. And it's not because their self-esteem suffers. One heroin addict summarized it by saying, "If I don't get up early tomorrow morning and hustle all day, the next day I'll die." Don't confuse work ethic with performance ethic, and especially with success ethic. Why do we make these money errors? The more we give money meaning, the more we lose focus on what money really means. And then we do strange things with money. Intelligent people spend money they don't have. Sophisticated people get scammed, sometimes repeatedly. Reasonable people forego pleasure to pursue money in order to purchase back a portion of what they just forfeited. Gifted people may not convert their talent into sufficient income. Balanced individuals can spend extravagantly or hoard compulsively. Otherwise, dependable people can ignore financial matters until they're really serious. Highly principled individuals can step over boundaries and write their own rules. Others are taught this from the beginning. Burton Watson, CEO of CyberNet, conned investors out of $120 million. As a boy, Burton's mother would tell him, "Exceptionally wealthy and exceptionally intelligent people don't have to follow the rules." The messages will keep repeating themselves. People will keep writing the same money stories that imprison them until they're listened to and strategically changed. Money has become more abstract. The vast majority of our money management occurs not through our hands or our broker's hands, but inside our minds in a complex interplay of thoughts, emotions, and neurological wiring. Here's a 22-second history of money. First, 2 goats were exchanged for 5 bags of rice. Then, coins enter as a symbol of value, a unit of exchange. Coins were replaced by paper bills, then paper checks, then plastic, then a pure abstraction of numbers stored and traded as configurations of electrons. As money becomes more abstracted, transactions are easier, but our understanding of money may fade, and our relationship with it changes. An example of the shadow side. I recently heard Dan Ariely, author of Predictably Irrational, present studies that showed 2 conditions that increased cheating behavior. The more people are removed from actual money, such as more abstraction, like dealing with derivatives like options and mortgage-backed securities, recall the complex instruments Madoff and Stanford dealt with. Even other money managers said they didn't know exactly what they were doing. And secondly, a social environment where you see cheating around you. We'll talk later about emotional contagion. Money is a way of thinking we know exactly what we're getting. We think we know what money is by what it can do for us, as if it will guarantee our expectations. Mind matters and brain business. What's the role of the mind and brain in money behaviors and financial decisions? The answer, everything. Why do we resist change, even changing a story that doesn't work? What keeps people from doing what they know they need to do for themselves? Why will someone repeat behavior that doesn't work, often doing it harder, and expect a different result, even when it leads to lower energy, debt, plateaued careers, or disappointing relationships? Nassim Taleb asks in The Black Swan, what are our minds made for? It looks like we have the wrong user's manual. Part of the answer to why we resist change is in our minds. We repeat the same story because it's our comfort zone, secure and predictable. A comfort zone may be limiting or uncomfortable, but it's familiar, a default model. We repeat because we know how it will turn out. That creates the illusion of effectiveness. A new story, on the other hand, generates uncertainty and trepidation. The easiest and fastest way to end this discomfort is to go back to the familiar, the old story. People fail to change because they don't feel safe changing. Changing means leaving their home base of reality, the internal map that's synonymous even with identity. We tend to return to our default mode. Let's do a brief exercise. If you're not driving while you're listening to this, do this exercise. Put your palms together in a firm way and interlock your fingers. You've been doing that for some time. Notice when your hands are firmly together, which thumb is on top. Now, keep your fingers exactly the same and change your thumbs so that the other one is on top. How does that feel? Probably a little bit awkward. Now, move your thumbs back to their original position. Kind of a relief. That's why people don't change or succeed remarkably or derail when they do. They return to their comfort zone. Now, up the ante, add significant success or significant stress, such as a major transition, really out of a comfort zone. We'll talk more about comfort zones and how to program change. There's always the pull of the old and the fear of the new. The hypnotherapist, Milton Erickson, told a story from his childhood in which whenever it snowed, he would be the first to get up and go to school so that he could create a fresh path in the snow. He intentionally created a circuitous path with zigzags and indirect turns. He noticed that each person who followed him followed the same path until the end of the day. The path was well worn despite its circuitous route. No one started a new, more direct route. No matter how many turns and twists, each person in turn followed the path of least resistance. This is how neural pathways are laid down in the brain, by early experiences, then repeated until they're etched more deeply, even if they don't work as well, even if they're circuitous and require way more work. To think creatively, new neural pathways must be developed outside the cycle of experience. Stimulation for new insight is a circumstance where the brain can't predict what will happen next. The catalyst for insight is a novel stimulus, new information, or new context. We're going to talk about this juncture in particular, when your mind and brain both react to leaving the familiar and engage new behavior. The uncertainty of this newness can be read as evidence not to proceed, or as intuition of a wrong choice. Or it can be read as a signpost of change and progress. Discomfort and uncertainty begin any significant journey. Our brains even have an error detection mechanism located very close to the emotional center that says this isn't normal when we try something new. We'll talk about how to use this mechanism as part of a powerful internal navigation system. We struggle to embrace change. Many of the methods to facilitate change are contrary to how the mind and brain work. Neuroscience, quantum physics, and strategic coaching have a lot to teach us about change and resistance to change. Our money stories tell us less about money and more about the human mind and its operations. At times, both our minds and our brains can work against us. When you think with one part of the brain and feel with another, you need a map. We're going to incorporate some groundbreaking research from different disciplines with strategic coaching to understand resistance to change and guide strategies of change. We're going to use emotional economics to inform money decisions, even to outsmart our brains at times. We can reprogram our minds and rewire our brains to create wealth and success. How do we get our brains to work with us in creating money stories? The brain has a mind of its own, and we are of two or more minds. Neuroscientists study the responses and functioning of the brain by functional magnetic resonance imaging, fMRI, a video of the brain in action as it responds to different situations. These studies have disproven the long-standing assumption that people have a consistent and predictable set of preferences and responses that they choose based on logic. Different parts of the brain operate in radically different ways. Money behavior and financial decisions are linked to both mind dynamics and brain activities. We're going to use these findings to inform certain decisions. A glimpse at some examples. The prefrontal cortex says, let's think about the 12-month game plan and retirement savings. But the limbic system says, relax, let's have that second cognac and order that 24-inch iMac. My amygdala even specifies the brand of cognac. Each part of the brain struggles over the same dollar, hopefully without tearing it. Emotions do not simply and only corrupt decision-making. Emotions narrow attention and compress focus on the immediate. But those individuals who feel no emotion are not good at making decisions. Making people happy is not simply giving them more of what they prefer. The brain's pleasure center quickly accommodates to new stimuli and expects them to continue. David Geffen said, "Anyone who believes that money makes you happy doesn't have money." When someone's stock portfolio does well, they may impute this to their talent and smartness. And it could be. Gamblers interpret good fortune as skill. My wife and I play heads-up poker, and she finally confessed that one of my tells is that when I happen to draw a really lucky hand, I have a slightly smug look, like I think I'm brilliant. The important thing about your money story is to discern what works and what does not. The components that work don't need fixing. The ones that don't work need to be revised in order to enhance both your money and your life stories. And to discern what's really about money and what hitchhikes on money. Your life can be changed significantly by changing your money story. Money is a magnifier. Like adversity, it reveals character. Whoever a person is, excess money will exaggerate. If a person is a problem drinker, money will make them more drunk. If someone's insecure, money may make them more paranoid. If someone is caring and generous, money can help them become a better philanthropist. In summary, you can roadmap a new money story. We're going to apply these 7 steps to understand your money story in order to create a new one that can be successful and filling. Recognize authorship. You are writing your money story from assumptions to every choice about earning, spending, and saving. Own your story. Accountability is a prerequisite to change. Assess plot and storylines. Recognize the behaviors, hidden messages, and elusive language of mind and emotion. Decide what to change. Make informed choices about what story components to keep, let go, change, and enhance. Map changes, goals, and success strategies. Author new experiences. Create the new money story you desire. And program new identity. Incorporate and sustain the changes by a corresponding internal growth. It is not wealth, position, possessions, or even a chase of happiness that creates problems. It's when you lose yourself in the chase. Our money stories are a large part of our life stories. Stories awaken emotion. Widely accepted portrayals of money tell us about the common emotional meanings and definitions that we bestow on money. They tell us what moves people about money and the basic emotions money evokes. We personify the economy or the stock market as if each were a story of its own. We make a story out of events in order to infer relationship and assign causality. We live our money stories each day. With each monetary transaction, the themes may be unstated, but they are evident in each transaction. Some of the money issues are really about money, but many are about other matters, private and even secret, hitchhiking on money. We write our money stories, live them, can revise them, or write new money stories. We're going to learn how you can strategically rewire your brains and reprogram your minds to create wealth and success. Money may not be the answer, but it certainly has both consent and veto power. Money does talk, and if you don't know and speak the secret language of your money story, its noise will be confusing and its silence will be deafening. The most fundamental understanding about our relationship with money is not a depth understanding of money or finances. It's about understanding how our minds and brains work and how that affects our behavior, including about money. The beliefs and decisions and seemingly inexplicable behavior involving money aren't about money at all. Money is a portal to the immaterial and the intangible. A money story is a large part of a life story. It's been said that the secrets of great stories are the secrets of the mind, and that unlocking these secrets awaken the power of story in you. Work with that power, James Bunnet tells us, and you can steal fire from the gods. Your money story is the paradigm to understand your relationship to your life story, your fundamental beliefs, assumptions, convictions, and personal truths about money will be the same ones essentially about your life. If you get behind in your paperwork in your life, you'll likely be behind in your financial paperwork. If you put off doing necessary things that will reap a larger benefit later, you probably will be doing the same thing with long-term savings and retirement. To find out what you believe about your life, the fundamental convictions you have, the ultimate truths you hold, look to your money story. We began a journey to understand the choice architecture of your money story. You write your money story, live it, can revise it, or write an informed, powerful new money story.